Shabbos Daf Samech Dalet. We are going to begin on the very bottom of Samech Gimel Amud Beis. We did this at the end of last year, but we're going to go back because this is a great starting point, and we are going to begin with the words Tanur Rabbanan, about six lines from the bottom of the Amud. Yesterday, the Gemara made by mention the idea that when it comes to a woven garment of any size, it is going to be Mekabel Tumah. Tosfos already noted yesterday on Samech Gimel Amud Beis that despite the fact that the Gemara earlier stated that in order for a woven garment to be Mekabel Tumah, it has to be either Gimel by Gimel Tfachim or Gimel by Gimel Etzba'os, but Tosfos noted that's if it's coming from a larger garment and it is a break off of a larger garment. However, a woven garment that was started and made in this fashion at any size because of the nature that in the fabrics, the strings were spun and woven, are in fact going to be Mekabel Tumah at any size. The Gemara now is going to be quoting a Braisa, and we're going to be discussing this extensively. Over the course of today's daf, the first half of today's daf, we're going to be discussing Inyanei Tumah Tahara, and the second half of today's daf, we're going to go back to our next Mishnah, and we're going to be resuming our discussion regarding articles of clothing that can and cannot be worn out into the Chatzer and the Rishos HaRabim. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara is going to be quoting the Braisa. I recall she would tell me that when it comes to a woven garment of any size, it will be susceptible to tumah. But she would tell me, and when it comes to a jewelry, so of any size, it's going to be tameh. If I have a something which is a composite of both something which is woven and it is a piece of jewelry, so it is going to become tameh. Most of sakal abeged shetameh mishum arig. Then the Braisa says, now we read this Braisa yesterday, and we noted that the Braisa is very difficult to explain even on the simplest level. The Braisa seems to suggest that when it comes to sack, now sack is sackcloth. Sackcloth back in the day was made up by spun goat's hair. So if I have sackcloth, sack, so it is more than the baggage, shetame mishabargu, because it's going to be katame because of arig, because it's woven. Now, in of itself, it just simply doesn't read well and doesn't make a lot of sense because, as we already pointed out, any woven garment is going to be susceptible to tumah, and it's certainly not limited to sackcloth, so it certainly is just difficult to read the words of the Braisa. In just a minute, we're going to give better clarification of what that means in the Braisa. Amar Rava, ari kol shu tame may o beged. So Rava now is going to be giving the sourcing of the halachas that we just learned together in the Braisa. One, when it comes to a woven article of any size, it's going to be Mekabel Tumah. That we learned from the pasuk of O Beged. That's in the psukim in the Torah by Thomas Sheretz. Tachshi kol shu tamim mitzitz. We know that a jewelry is going to be tamim at any size. We learned from tzitz. The Gemara went over this point yesterday extensively. And arig v'tachshi kol shu tamim mi kol kli maisa. Now, as far as if I have a composite of something which is woven and it's also jewelry, so it's kind of an embroidered and a piece of jewelry is attached to it, and of any size it's going to be tummy, and that we learn out from Kol Kli Maisa as long as it's fashioned by a professional. Amalei Ahumei Rabbanan L'Rava, the Gemara notes the following discussion or challenge that was posed to Rava. Ha'u b'minyan k'siv. Now, in terms of the pasuk that we just cited, that was in terms of the war that we went to against Midian, and that's talking about Tumas Mace, and here we're talking about Tumas Sheretz, and how can I learn from one to the other? Amar Lei, so he says back to him, Gamar Kli Kli Mihasam, well, we learn out a Gzera Shava between the two, and the Gzera Shava tells us that whatever is true regarding one is going to be true regarding the other as well, and therefore, that was that is what allows us to learn out whatever is true by Tumas Mace is also going to be true by Tumas Sheretz as well. Most of Sakal HaBegad Shetameh Mishum Arig. Now we go back to the line of the Braisa, which admittedly was really difficult to understand, and the Gemara now is going to see clarification of what that means. That somehow when it comes to sack, some sort of sackcloth that's made by goat's hair, so it's going to be more than that of a beged, because it's going to be tummy because of an arig. The Gemara's question is really simple. Atu beged lav ariku? What do you mean? A beged is a woven garment. So you could tell me that a sackcloth is also considered a woven garment, or I could weave a garment made up of sackcloth or out of goat's hair, but how is that any better than that of a article of clothing? It doesn't make any sense. Hachi kamar, so the Gemara says, this is pshat. Most of sakal abeged, afa pi she'eno arig tameh. Ah, so what the Bryce is telling us is the following, and that is that when it comes to the woven goat's hair, So the truth of the matter is it doesn't have to be woven. Meaning when we're talking about a woven garment that's made up of wool or linen, so there it has to be woven, has to be arig, in order for it to become susceptible to tumah. But when it comes to goat's hair, it does not have to be woven, even if it's not woven. L'may chazi, the Gemara wants to know, now what is it good for? Meaning, in order for it to become a beged, it has to have some sort of function and utility to it. What exactly is it good for? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shekein Ani Kolea Shalosh Nimin, V'Sole B'Tzavar Bito. Because what happens is that you have a poor person who takes the three strands of the goat hair, he braids them, and then he uses them as a necklace for his daughter. So because this is a kind of jewelry that's worn by people, even though it's worn by not the entire population, but only a segment of the population, but still, it's worn by a significant segment of the population, and therefore, it qualifies as something which is an article of clothing. And therefore, the goat's hair, even though it's not arig, even though it's not woven, now that has to go through a process, and that point is going to be made very clear in the Gemara in just a moment. Meaning, it is not sufficient if it's just simply, the goat hair is just simply stranded together, but it has to be spun, and it has to be, now when it comes to regular garments, it has to be woven, and what we're saying now why the goat hair is it doesn't have to be woven, even if it's just braided, that would be sufficient. And the Gemara now is going to make this point very clear. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, sak, ainli ala sak, when it comes to a sackcloth becoming susceptible to tama, so that only means that it has to be a sack. Minan l'rabos es akilkli v'zachevik. What if it's not a made into an entire cloth, but let's say it's just simply some braided strings. Now the Bryce over here is describing two types of braided strings. One's a kilkli and the other one is a chevik. These are various straps that are used to secure the saddle to a probably a horse. But anyway, these are made up of goat's hair, and they are simply braided. And the Bryce now wants to know, how do I know that they're going to become susceptible to tumah? So the Gemara says, osak. The Brisa says, osak. Yachosh animar be'es ha-chavalim ve'es ha-meshichos. Okay, so maybe it's true by all ropes, meaning any ropes or meshichos is a measuring stick or measuring string. How do I know that, or at least I would have suspected that they also are going to become susceptible to tumah? So tamalomer sak, ma'sak tavoi va'arig, af kol tavoi va'arig. So just like sak has to be that it is going to be spun and woven, so to anything else which is going to be spun and woven. So we just learned together in this braisa this idea that when it comes to the goat hair that is made into a garment, even though it is does not have to be necessarily woven, as long as it is spun. And now it's true, the end of the braisa we use the word woven, but woven in the context of goat hair just simply means that it has to go through some processing. Some processing would mean that it has to be spun and it has to be braided. In fact, Rashi over here says that the once it is spun and one is braided, that is tantamount to the ariga of a regular garment. So we have now a chumrah by goat's hair, and that's exactly what the brisa means, and this brisa really supports what we said in the previous brisa. That when it comes to goat hair, despite the fact that when it comes to a regular garment made up of either wool or linen, so it has to be arig, it has to be a full weave, which means that the fibers themselves have to be spun, and it has to be woven in order for it to become susceptible to tumah. But when it comes to goat hair, it just simply has to be spun, and that's it. And it has to be also braided together, but in other words, it does not have to go through the weaving process. And that's the hosafa, that's the chumrah that you have by the goat's hair that you do not have by a quote-unquote a regular beged. Harehu omer b'meis, we are going to continue now in the braisa. Harehu omer b'meis, now the psukim that we just quoted, are by Thomas Sheretz. And now the Gemara wants to know, how are we going to take this and translate it and relate it over to by Thomas Meitz? So, Harehu Omer B'meiz V'chol Kli Or V'chol Ma'aseh Izim Tizchata'u. So we have psukim that describe by Thomas Meitz that when it comes to something made up of either hide or something made up of goat's hair, so Tizchata'u, it needs to go through the Tahara process. This is by Thomas Meitz. So the rabbis are kilkli v'zachevik, and by virtue of the fact that the Torah says the word kol, so it comes to include even the kilkli and the chevik. These are the kinds of straps that we described earlier that secure the saddle to the animal. So yachol shani mar b'esachavam v'samashichas. What about rope and measuring string? So and the brisa is about to finish its point, but the Gemara at this point in time thinks, now before we come to a source, before the brisa gets to its punchline, Can't we just simply suggest vidinhu? Meaning it's maybe just a simple kavachomer. Timei b'sherets v'timei b'meis. That we know that when it comes to goat's hair, so it is going to become susceptible by timei b'sherets. So and it's also going to be susceptible to timei b'meis. Ma kishetimei b'sherets lo timei ela tavoi v'arig. So when it comes to Masheretz, as we already established, so it has to be spun, and it has to be, now again, the word woven over here, to be understood not super literally, just simply means it has to go through some processing, a braiding. So why can't we say the same thing is true by Tumas Meis? So the Gemara, as it is suggesting, that we don't need a limud, we could just learn a kavachomer, the Gemara says, hein, this kavachomer is good, it's not good. Im heka b'tumas sheretz shehi kala, naka b'tumas ameis shehi chamura. How can I make a limud to go from Tumas Sheretz to Tumas Meis? As we have said time and again throughout Shas, Tumas Sheretz is more kala, it's more lenient than Tumas Ameis. Tumas Sheretz only lasts for one day. Tumas Ameis lasts for 7 days. I can't learn a halacha from Tumas Sheretz to Tumas Meis. So now, as the Gemara just interrupted itself, its citation of the Brisa, in order to try to make it out through a Kavachomer, and realizing that the Kavachomer is not going to work, so now we're back to the Lima. Tamalamer, this is now the Brisa. So the Brisa says, Beged V'or, L'Gzera Shava. So we have the terms Beged V'or used both by Tumas Sheretz and by Tumas Meis, and that creates a Gzera Shava. Nemar Beged V'or B'Sheretz, V'nemar Beged V'or B'Meis, Ma Beged V'or Ha'mor B'Sheretz, Lo Timei Ela Tavui V'Arig, Av Beged V'or Hamor b'meis lo time ela b'tavu v'arik. So we just simply are going to extrapolate from one area of tuma to the other based on the gzera shava. And just like by tuma sheretz, it has to be tavu v'arik. So too by tuma smes, it has to be tavu v'arik. And we have what is formally known now as gzera shava. Ma beged v'arik hamor b'meis time kol maise izim. Av beged v'or hamor b'sheretz time kol maise izim. Now the Gemara is going to understand that the gzera shava is going to go in two directions. It's going to teach us a halacha from Tumas Sheretz to Tumas Meis, and it's also going to go in the other way, in the other direction as well. So just like by Beged V'or that says regarding Meis, it's going to include all Maise Izim, meaning not just the goat hair that is braided. I'm sorry, not just the goat hair that is woven, but even the goat hair that's braided. So Abeged V'or Hamor B'Sheretz. So too by Beged V'or that said regarding a sheretz, it's Timei Kol Maise Izim. It includes all types of processed goat hair. Ainli Ela Davar Haba Min Izim, Minali Rabba Davar Haba Mizanav Asus Mizanav Hapara. So the Gemara says, okay, well, what about other types of hairs? Let's say, for example, the hair that comes from from a horse, from the tail of the horse or from the tail of the cow. So Tom Lomer Osak. So the drasha is Osak, which is said by Tumas Sheretz. Now Vaha Afikta Lekilkel Vechavak. Now the Gemara says, now if you've been following well, and admittedly this is a lot to keep straight in terms of where we're getting which halacha from, the Osak that we just quoted regarding Tumas Sheretz is there to teach us that it includes even the horse tail and the cow tail. The Gemara says we learned that in the beginning of the shir to teach us the halacha regarding these various strands and straps that are used to hold in the saddle. The hafik, the lekukle, the chavak, you use them already to darshan out the straps. So honey, me let me comment the last gzera shava. The Gemara says that's true, but that was only because we at that point in time didn't know about the gzera shava. Hashadas gzera shava, but now that we have the gzera shava, he aser le. So now the word osak becomes superfluous; it's no longer necessary, and therefore it comes to teach us the halacha regarding the tails of a horse and the tails of a cow. The Ainli Ela B'Sheretz. Now, this halacha of cow tail and horse tail is only as it relates to Tumas Sheretz. How do I know? Tumas Meis Minayin. So how do I know we're going to go from Tumas Sheretz to Tumas Meis? Now, we all already at this point in time know the answer, and that is we have the Gzera Shava. We have a portal that now opens up between Tumas Sheretz and Tumas Meis. We learned already the halacha from Tumas Meis to Tumas Sheretz, that it includes goat's hair, that even though it was just spun and it was only braided and it wasn't woven, so that is going to be susceptible to Tumas. That's true by Tumas Meis. Gzera Shava extends it to Tumas Sheretz. So we're just simply going to go in the other direction. And we all know that. That's where the Gemara is headed to. But the Gemara, again, just wants to interrupt itself to suggest maybe it's a Kavachomer, Vidinhu. Timei B'Meis V'Timei B'Sheretz. Makish Timei B'Sheretz. Asa Davar Haba Mizanav Asusim Mizanav Apar Kemasa Izim. So just by Tumas Sheretz, we included the horse tail and the cow tail. So we are going to do essentially the same thing when it comes to Tumas Meis as well. So Hain, again, the Gemara says the Kal V'Chomer is not an exciting Kal V'Chomer. In fact, it has a fault in it. In here, by Betumas Erev, Shehi Meruba, Narbe Betumas Shiva, Shehi Muetes. So the Gemara says that when it comes to Tumas Sheretz, so there actually is a Chomra by Tumas Sheretz. Now, as we just pointed out moments earlier, there is a Kula by Tumas Sheretz, and that you're only Tumas for one day. But the Gemara now speaks about the Chomra of Tumas Sheretz. What is it? The Gemara describes it as being a Meruba. And that is that when it comes to Tumas Sheretz, it is something which is pretty ubiquitous. Tumas Sheretz is Tumas for one day. There are many different terms, types of Tumas that is for one day. Rashi writes, Shekol HaMagos Tumas Erev Hain, Bein B'Sheretz V'Nevel V'Shech V'Zeru Magas HaZavu Maga Tumas Meis, meaning the vast majority of Tumas that a person is going to come into contact with, which it will be in fact a source of Tumas, is only Tumas for one day. It is only Tumas Meis that's going to be Tumas for 7 days. So I can't take a halacha that applies to Tumas Sheretz and necessarily apply it to Tumas Meis, because Tumas Meis is such an anomaly that exists within the world of Tumah. So now the Kal V'Chomer is not going to get us anywhere. So now that we're no longer going to be able to use a Kal V'Chomer, so now Tam Alamer, so we have the Drasha. And the Drasha, we already know, it's a Gzeira Shava. Beged V'Or, Beged V'Or, L'Gzeira Shava. Nemar Beged V'Or B'Sheretz, V'Nemar Beged V'Or B'Meis. Ma Beged V'Or Hamor B'Sheretz. Asa davar haba mizanav hasos mizanav hapara kemasa izim. So av beged v'or hamor bebeis. Asa davar haba mizanav hasos mizanav hapara kemasa izim. So to say it succinctly and really clearly, it's the Gzeira Shava that tells us that just like we introduce the idea that the tail of a horse and the tail of a cow are going to, as long as I make it into some sort of cord, some sort of braided cord, it's going to be mekabel tuma vis-a-vis tuma sheretz. We're also going to say it regarding tumas meis as well. And now the Gemara has just got one more point to make before this entire discussion comes to a conclusion. And that is the Gzeira Shava. What type of Gzeira Shava is it? And this is a discussion that we saw in Masechta Nida in detail. And the Gemara over here is just going to make quick reference to it. And that is the following idea. What is the Gzeira Shava? So nowadays in the world of the internet, so I have one word to describe Gzeira Shava that explains it so clearly and so succinctly, and basically it's a hyperlink. When I have a word over here and I have a word over there and I click on one word, so it immediately takes me to the other word. Now obviously in the Torah itself you have, I can't give you a number, but obviously it is a large number. You have a lot of words that are used in a lot of the similar words that are used in many different contexts. Think about the number of times that the Torah says the word who or es or vayomer. So obviously to just simply say that every similar word now opens up a portal to another area in the Torah where you have the same word being used. So obviously that is just simply untenable. It has to be that the Gzeira Shava has a certain Masorah to it, has a certain tradition to it. At the very same time, however, as much as there is a tradition to the Gzeira Shava, and we say, the Gemara tells us, the Gemara in Sukkah, and Daf Lamed or Lamed Aleph, that a person cannot make a Gzeira Shava on his own. A Gzeira Shava has to become a rabbi, has to be coming from a tradition, from a source. At the very same time, when it comes to Gzeira Shava, there also are levels of degrees of how strong a Gzeira Shava is. It's like when something is bonded one to another. So sometimes it's a single bond, sometimes it's a double bond. And so when you have the Gzeira Shava opening a portal from one area to another, how strong is a Gzeira Shava is? Now, it is a funny discussion that the Gemara is having. It's one that definitely requires much more understanding, because if the Gzeira Shava is only can be coming because of a Masorah, so then what do I care about the strength of the Gzeira Shava? Meaning it's just simply a tradition that was brought down from one generation to the next, that these two words are able to open up one to the other and a portal is created. So then why exactly do I need a certain level of, why are we grading the strength of the Gzeira Shava? So that is, I raise the question. I don't have a wonderful answer to this question, but certainly it is a worthwhile to contemplate and to consider. And here's what we learned back in Masechta Nida, and we're going to review quickly right now. And that is that how strong is the Gzeira Shava? The words that are used to create the portal opening between one parsha in the Torah and the other parsha of the Torah, were they necessary for the simple pshat of the psukim, or were they totally extraneous and superfluous? If they were extraneous and superfluous, that is a tell of the Torah, that's a nod of the Torah, that now this was designed to be put here for the purpose of Gzeirah Shavah. And now we'll go even one step further. If, let's say, both sides of the Gzeirah Shavah, the two words that are creating this opening between one parsha and another, if both words of the Gzeirah Shavah on both ends of the Gzeirah Shavah, if they're both superfluous, so then the Gzeirah Shavah is what the Gemara describes as mufne mishnei tzadim. It is now it is superfluous on both sides, and that creates the strongest Gzeirah Shavah. And all the Gemara is going to do right now, and we'll run through this quickly, is the idea that in this particular circumstance where I have a Gzeirah Shavah that opens up from Tumas Sheretz to Tumas Meis, allowing us to learn the halachas from Tumas Sheretz to Tumas Meis and from Tumas Meis back to Tumas Sheretz, so this is going to be a super solid Gzeirah Shavah, which is mufne mishnei tzadim. And the Gemara is just simply going to make this point. So the Gemara says, La'ai afnui mufne. The truth of the matter is that this is a Gzeirah Shavah, which is mufne. Michti. The Gemara says, let us consider. Sheretz itkes to Shech Vazera, because we know that the Sheretz is connected to the Shech Vazera. The Pasuk says, Dichsiv. Isha Sher Teitzim Yimenez Shech Vazera. And right next to it is the next Pasuk. Isha Sher Yiga Bichol Sheretz. Viksiv Bey B'Shech Vazera. Now we know regarding Shech Vazera. V'chol Beged V'chol Or Asher Yeh Alav Shech Vazera. So we have both Beged and we have Or mentioned by Shech Vazera. So Beged V'Or Dekas Rachmana B'Sheretz Lamali. So the idea that the Torah now has to go ahead and repeat Beged V'Or by Tumas Sheretz now becomes totally superfluous, because I already knew that from Shech Vazera. So what would be the purpose? Shema Minal Afnuye. So you see that over there by Tumas Sheretz, it is perfectly superfluous. The Akasim Mufne Mitzadachanu, and the Gemara says, okay, but we've only handled one side of the Gzeirah Shavah. Hanich Laman Darma Mufne Mitzadachan Lemeid Mein Meshivan. So there is an opinion that says that a one-sided Gzeirah Shavah. I don't really mean one-sided Gzeirah Shavah. I mean that it is superfluous on one side of the Gzeirah Shavah. So Lemeidim, so you learn a Vein Meshivan, you cannot ask questions on it. So that's very good. So we have a strong enough Gzeirah Shavah. Elaman Darma Lemeidim Meshivan Ma'ik Lemeimer. But there is another opinion in that Gemara Nida that says that if it's only superfluous on one side, so you can learn the Gzeirah Shavah, but if you have a question, if you have a pircha, you can ask it. And we already know over here that we do have a pircha. So the Gemara says, Demeis Nami Afnuye Mufne. So the Gemara says, well, the other side of the Gzeirah Shavah by Tumas Meis also is superfluous. Why? Michti Meis Itkes Shech Vazera, because we know that there's a hekesh between Tumas Meis and Shech Vazera. Dichsiv Hanoge B'chol Tamei Nefesh O Ish Asher Teitzei Mimene Shech Vazera. The Torah in one pasuk put side by side Tumas Meis and Shech Vazera. V'ksiv v'Shech Vazera v'chol Beged v'chol Or. And we know by Shech Vazera we have the words Beged and Or. So now, Beged v'Or dekas v'rachmana b'meis lamali. Why does the Torah have to say Beged v'Or when it comes to Tumas Meis? It now becomes perfectly superfluous. Shema mina le'afnuye. So you see over here that we have a Gzeirah Shavah now that is mufne mishnei tzadim. It is, according to all opinions, a very strong Gzeirah Shavah. And it leaves us now with the conclusion that the Tumas Sheretz now, Tumas Meis are connected through the mechanism of Gzeirah Shavah, a Gzeirah Shavah that now is mufne mishnei tzadim. On both sides, the word that is used, in this case, actually two words that are being used for the Gzeirah Shavah, are superfluous. And that leads us now to the conclusion that we can, without any pirchas whatsoever, learn out halachas from one to the other. Now, just quickly to summarize, we basically are going to be now saying out two halachas. One halacha is that when it comes to Tumas Meis, we learn that when I have any strands of hair that is spun and not woven, but just braided by goat hair, that would be considered a kli susceptible to tumah. That's true when it comes to Tumas Meis. The Torah spells that out. So now we're going to take that halacha and we're going to now bring it over to Tumas Sheretz, and we're going to do that using the Gzeirah Shavah. Similarly, when it comes to Tumas Sheretz, we learn together that if I have strands of string that are braided, that are made up from the tail of a cow or the tail of a horse, and I spun them and I braid them, so they're going to be susceptible to Tumah. Now I'm going to take exactly that construct and I'm going to bring it over, and it's going to be susceptible to Tumas Meis. Those are the two halachas that we're carrying over from Tumas Sheretz to Tumas Meis, back from Tumas Meis to Tumas Sheretz. We are continuing in the Gemara. We are towards the bottom of Samach Dalam and Aleph, and the Gemara now has a couple of words of Agadata before we get to the next Mishnah. The Pasuk says, V'nakrev is karban Hashem asher teitzei. Let me start again. V'nakrev is karban Hashem ish asher matzah klizav etz adav etz amid tabas agil v'chumaz. After having gone to war with Midian, we come back with spoils of war. Most of it were kept by the soldiers. Some of the soldiers gave a portion of it over as truma to the Kohanim. But most of it were kept by the soldiers, and the soldiers go over to Moshe Rabbeinu and say that they want to offer some of it as a karban. At which point in time, Amar Rabbi Elazar, we're going to get back to why they wanted to bring it as some of it as a karban, but the Gemara over here is looking at some of these spoils of war. Now, everything just mentioned in this pasuk that we just cited are certainly jewelry that's worn by women. Right, the etzad, the samid, the tabas. So those are jewelry that we're familiar with. We're talking about various types of bracelets and rings. It's the agil and the kumaz, which are mentioned here in this pasuk, which are difficult to translate. And the Gemara does, in fact, translate both of them. Agil zel defushal dadim. So the agil is something that is form-fitting that goes on the chest of the woman. And kumaz zel defushal beis rachem. And the kumaz goes on to the private area of the woman. And the purpose of the woman wearing these types of jewelry, obviously, is to attract attention. I'm Rav Yosef. I hachi hainu demetargamina machoch. Rav Yosef says, now good, now I understand Targum. And I feel like we say this on a regular basis, because we do say this on a regular basis, and that Rav Yosef is citing Targum all the time. And over here, Rav Yosef is citing Targum on the Chumash. I generally find Rav Yosef citing Targum on Nevi'im. But over here, he's citing Targum on Chumash. And now he says, if you look at Targum over here, you will see that when the Targum translates the word kumaz, it translates as the word machoch. Now, the word machoch is similar to the Aramaic word, which means gichuch, which means basically laughter. But laughter over here does not mean like ha-ha funny. Laughter over here like in levity. So, davar ha-mevi, that's what he says. Davar ha-mevi lideir gichuch. These particular types of jewelry lead to levity, lead to immoral behavior. Amale Rabba Migufa de Krash Mamina Rabba says, I knew this already looking at the pasuk itself. The word kumaz, he understands as an acronym. Kan makum zima. This is where a person is going to have a lewd experience. So you see it just from the pasuk itself. Vayiksof Moshe al pekuda echal. Now Moshe was angry with the soldiers. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravu, Amar Lam Moshe Yisrael. And here the Gemara now gives us the midrashic dialogue back and forth between Moshe and the soldiers, exactly why Moshe was so angry with them. Shema chazartum lekil kolchem harishon. Now remember, the whole reason why we went to war against Midian is because when Bilam gave the advice to curse the Jewish people, and Balak was unsuccessful in doing so. So then Bilam went to plan B, and plan B was to send the Neshe Midjan, the women of Midjan, over to the Jews in order to seduce them, entice them to be Ovid of Avodah Zarah, and that, in fact, they did. And as a result of that, 24,000 of Bnei Yisrael died. And now, what Moshe was worried with the soldiers, because the soldiers now came back and they were suffering from a little bit of guilt, as they said now, oh, we're going to bring some of the spoils of war as a karban. And Moshe is now thinking to himself, oh, some of the spoils of the war going to the karban, and he's hearing some guilt on there, and he's wondering what exactly is the guilt coming from. And that's what he asks him. Shema chazatlan kilkolechem arishon. So is it possible that you did what exactly you should not have done, and that you should have been with the women? So amru lo, so they said to him, lo, nifkad mimenu ish. Not a single soldier died. And perhaps what their answer is very simple is that if in fact we were involved in avers during war, so then it would make sense. Then it would stand to reason that somebody died in the battle, but nobody died in the battle. So it is now a strong argument to say that nobody was tempted by any type of chet. So Moshe says, fine, so you shouldn't be guilty. And if you shouldn't be guilty, so then why are you bringing any kind of carbon whatsoever? So Amr lo, imide aver yatsano, mide hirer lo yatsano. Okay, fine, we weren't actually chotim, but we were thinking about it, we were contemplating it. Miyad v'nakrev is carbon Hashem. And at that point in time, so Moshe now said, okay, now I understand. So it was a hirer, and so he took it as a way of providing kapara for the fact that they were mahar. Tandebe Rabbi Shmuel, the Gemara quotes the Brisa of Rabbi Shmuel, and it's going to basically be the same point. Mimnei Mahut Zerchel Yisrael Sheba Oso Hador Kapara. Why were those people specifically in that generation requiring of any kind of kapara whatsoever? Mimnei, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, Shezanu Einehem Min Ha'erva. Because they looked at something they shouldn't have looked at in terms of action. They didn't do any action, but still, just the act of looking in of itself created a certain level of avera. I'm Rav Sheshes, and the Gemara now quotes the statement of Rav Sheshes. And this statement of Rav Sheshes we saw already back in Brachos, and we get to review it over here in Masechet Shabbos as well. The Torah listed when it comes to the spoils of Midian, outer jewelry, inner jewelry, and the Torah listed both of them in one sentence, Lomar Lecha, and it's there to teach you that Kol HaMistakav BeEtzbah Katana Shel Isha Ki'ilu Mistakav BeMakom HaTorfa. When a person looks at the small finger of a woman, it's as Ki'ilu, it's as if they're looking at the Makom HaTorfa as the at the most inappropriate of places. And over here, the word to focus us on is the word Mistakav, meaning just to see a woman in of itself, that's not the issue. The issue is to be gazing, is to be focusing on the woman and to be looking at the woman, even at the parts that a man is totally allowed to look at a woman, even the parts that are not considered a makum erva, not midaraisa, not midarabanan, right? Hands, face, and feet are totally permitted to be shown. But if a man is looking at those areas just simply to get benefit from looking at those areas, he's only doing so to incite his yetzahara. And the Gemara says it's no different than looking at the makum erva itself. All this was brought in because we were touching on earlier as we were going through the drushes, all the way at the beginning of the sugya, we were going on the clay midjan. The clay midjan was one of the sources of the halacha that we saw regarding susceptibility to tuma. And so the Gemara then just used the opportunity to quote a couple of drushes regarding clay midjan. Adkan, that takes us to the first half of of Shabbos Daf Samech Dalid, in which we basically went over halachas of tuma tahara, and with a couple of agadic points regarding Mechemes Midjan and the spoils of war that we came back from Midjan. We are now in the Mishnah on the top of Samech, Dalet, Amud Beis, Yotza Isha. This is what a woman now can go out with on Shabbos. So for the good part of the parak, now we've been discussing what a woman cannot go out with on Shabbos, and now we're going to go in the other direction, and these are the things that a woman can go out with on Shabbos. And again, you have to go back to what we said in the beginning of the parak, in that there are obviously considerations in terms of why the Chachamim said women cannot go out with certain items. Obviously, over here, all these items that a woman can go out with obviously do not warrant these concerns that we had in the items mentioned in the beginning of the parak. Yosei Isha, woman goes out, Bechutei Se'ar, she can go out with hair that's braided into her hair. Bein Mishla, now whether the hair is her own hair that was already cut off and then just used as a weave into her own hair, Bein Mishla Chaverta, or other women's hair that's woven into her hair, or Bein Mishla Behema, or let's say it's animal hair that's woven into her hair, all that would be fine. Uve Totafos, Uvesar Vitim, Bizman Shein Tefurim. And when it comes to the various types of ornaments that are worn on the front of her, hat, right? Ornaments that go down in the front, we described them earlier. As long as they're sewn into her hat, so that would be fine. And like we said earlier, once it's sewn into the hat, she's not going to take it off in the Rishus Rabin, because then that would demand that she take off her hat as well. And a woman will not do so in the Rishus Rabin. The kavel of a peah nachris achatzer. A woman can wear a kavel and a peah in the chatzer. Now, we already made this point earlier in the perek, but we're going to make it again. The kavel is some sort of wool cap. Wool cap that she's wearing. I'm pretty sure that it went underneath her regular hat. Peyanachris over here is what you and I would describe as a shetel. From Rashi, admittedly, it's not perfectly clear from Rashi if he's viewing this as a shetel, but the simplest way to say the Mishnah, and the way that certainly we could relate to the Mishnah, is that it's describing a shetel, and that could be worn into the chatzer. Now, later the Gemara is going to be discussing, and we're going to see this in just a couple of minutes from now, the idea that the kavel and the peah are allowed to be worn within the chatzer, but not outside the chatzer. And when it comes to all the other items that are mentioned, presumably they cannot be worn in the chatzer. For the items that can't be worn into the Rishus HaRabim, they can't be worn into the chatzer as well. The Gemara is going to make that point. We'll get there. B'moch sheba azna uve'moch a woman is allowed to go out with cotton stuffed in her ear, cotton in her shoe, or cotton in her private area, almost like a tampon. Bipilpo, we're talking a woman can go out with some sort of pepper that she puts in her mouth. Pepper over here, probably not the way you and I normally view a pepper. It must be some sort of spice or fragrance that she's putting in her mouth. It's going to remove the bad breath of Gilgal HaMelech, also with a small pile of salt. Anything else that she puts in her mouth. Okay, obviously we're not familiar with these items, but basically these were items that were held in the mouth, and either because she wasn't feeling well or because of bad breath. We'll talk more about this in tomorrow's daf. Shabbos, it cannot be put in on Shabbos itself, meaning it has to be put in before Shabbos. Now, if it falls out of her house, if it falls out of her mouth, she's not allowed to put it back into her mouth. And we will talk more about this in tomorrow's daf. And Shein Toteva, Shein Shalzav. Now, if it's a false tooth made out of gold, Rabbi Matir v'Chachamim Osrim, we have a debate amongst the Tanaim. Rabbi says that it would be mutter for a woman to wear it, and the Chachamim say it would be prohibited. And this too will be discussed extensively in the Gemara in terms of what the issues are over here. The first thing we're going to be discussing in the Gemara is the idea that she's weaving hair into her hair. And the Mishnah has taught us that she's allowed to weave different types of hair into her hair, and the Mishnah mentioned three types of hairs that she could weave into her hair. Tzricha, the Gemara's point starts off with, all three of them become absolutely necessary. Di'esh, meaning di'dav, we're talking about just her own hair. Mishum de lo mais, her own hair is not disgusting to her. Aval chaver de mais, but others' hairs, which could be viewed as disgusting to her. Emala, I would have thought that she's not allowed to go out with it. In other words, if she's going out with hair that clearly is not her own, so then she might be suffering some sort of embarrassment, and some people may point out to her, hey, that doesn't look like your hair, and she'll feel uncomfortable, take it off, end up carrying it. So that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. We're not worried about that. V'yashmin and dechaverta debas minahi. Now, even if it's other women's hair, but at least it's human hair. Aval de behema, but if it is the hair of an animal, la bar minah, it is not human hair. Emalo, I might have thought no. I might have thought that a woman would not be comfortable going out with animal hair. And again, it'll lead to the problem that people will point it out to her, and she will be the subject of ridicule, and she'll want to take it off. Emalo, I might have thought, no, tzricha. Therefore, all three of those cases are necessary. Each one is building a chiddush one on top of the other. Tana the Gemara quotes the Brisa of Avachalo, Seisa Yalda b'shel zikna is zikena, v'zikena b'shel yalda. Now, in terms of weaving other women's hair into her hair, so the Brisa says it has to match her age. The hair that she's weaving into her hair, if she's young, it has to be young hair, and if it's older, she has to be older. It has to be hair of an older woman. Now, b'shelam is zikena b'shel yalda, shel yalda shvachula. Now, the Gemara says, I can totally understand how it is that somebody who is a someone who's on the older side should not be wearing the hair of somebody who's younger, because shevachula, because it is obviously going to she wants the appearance to look younger. And I can totally understand why it would be that she would be interested in going out with that hair. And again, the concern now is going to be that once she goes out, people are going to point it out to her, hey, that hair looks pretty young, and you're not that young. And she's going to be she's going to be embarrassed, and she's going to take off the hair and end up carrying it. So that the Gemara says, I totally understand that. Eli Yalda b'shel zikena, so genayhula. So, but the Gemara says, Eli Yalda b'shel zikena amai. But if we're talking about a young girl going out with the hair of an older woman, so the Brisa wouldn't even need to make that point, meaning she wouldn't even do that to begin with. The genayhula is something which is embarrassing to her. And the Gemara says, that's a fair point. I did tana zikna b'shel yalada, tana nami yalada b'shel zikna. And the Gemara says, point is excellent. In fact, it's such a good point. There really was no point, there was no purpose in the Brisa telling us the other side of this. But nevertheless, the Brisa likes the symmetry. And so therefore, the Brisa writes it in a way that you have the parallel language that's used for both. The kavel of the peah nachris the chatzir. The kavel and the peah can be worn into the chatzir. So we're talking about some sort of wool cap, and in addition to the hat, and we're talking about a sheito, so they can be worn to the chatzir. Amar Rav Kol Shasru Chachamim, let's say it's bo l'rusha sarabim. Also, let's say it's bo l'chatzir. So Rav says the following. Go over this perek. Every time the Chachamim made a gzera, a ban, about any article of jewelry that cannot be worn out into the rusha sarabim, it can also not be worn into the chatzir as well. And in other words, the gzera de rabbanan is extensive, and it includes not just the rusha sarabim, but it includes the chatzir as well. With notable exceptions, chutz mikavol peyer nachris, meaning the kavol and the peyer nachris are the notable exceptions, meaning that within the gzera de rabbanan, and I know we went over this idea earlier in the perek, but now we're spelling it out very clearly, with the peyer and the with the peyer nachris and the kavol, the chachamim made a certain exception, an exclusion within the gzera de rabbanan, allowing a woman to go out to the chutzir with the kavol and with the peyer nachris. So Rabbi Anani bar Sasa Mishmei, the Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi Amar Hakol Kekavol, And on the other side, meaning we just went over the position of Rav. And on the other side, Rabbi Anani Bar Sason says in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, that everything is like the kavel, meaning just like a woman is allowed to go out with a kavel into the chatzir, even though she's not allowed to go in the Rishat Rabbim, that's true by all other jewelry as well. And so what we have over here is a machlokus of the Tanaim. Are the Pei Nachris and the kavel exceptions to the rule, or are they actually part and parcel of the rule? So Tanan, the Gemara says, let's take a look at our Mishnah. The kavel of Pei Nachris the chatzir. So it said in the Mishnah that the kavel and the Pei Nachris can be taken out into the chatzir, with the clear implication that all other jewelries that were mentioned cannot go, cannot even be taken out to the chatzir. Now, Bishlam of the Rav Nicha. Now, according to Rav, this is really excellent. This is exactly what Rav's position is. El Rabbi Anani Bar Sason Kasha, but according to Rabbi Anani Bar Sason, it in fact is difficult because the simple reading of the Mishnah does not accord with his position. He says that all of the jewelry items can be taken out into the chatzer. So the Gemara's response to that is, Rabbi Anani Bar Sason Mishmei Daman Kamarlei. The Gemara says, let's remember, Rabbi Anani Bar Sason, who was he quoting? He was quoting Rabbi Shmuel B'Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Shmuel B'Rabbi Yossi Tanahu Paleg. So he's quoting a Tana. So in other words, you're right. The Mishnah is not going to be going like Rabbi Anani Bar Sason. Absolutely correct. But in the very least, however, he does have a Tana that does source, and so fine. So he just simply has a Tana who argues with our Mishnah. Rav Mishnahani, now the Gemara says, as far as Rav is concerned, why does he point to specifically the kavel and the Pei Nachris as a woman's allowance and to be taken out to the chatzar? Ama Ula, Kedesh Lotiskana Abala. So Ula gives the explanation, because we do not want her to become disgusting to her husband. Kedetayan, the Gemara quotes a braisa that speaks to this idea, that even when a woman is somewhat in a more unkempt state, or in this particular case in the Braisa, in a state where she should not be with her husband, but still, Chachma Yisrael wanted her to be attractive to her husband. Bahadava b'nidasa. So over here we're talking about a woman who is a nida. Zekenim Arishonat Mamrin, the original Zekenim said, Shalot Hichol, that when a woman is during her state of being a nida, she should not put any type of makeup on. Velo tafkos. Different various types of makeups. Velo tizkashu b'big tzivonim, not wear attractive clothing. Achaba Rabbi Kiva v'limid. Rabbi Kiva came along and Rabbi Kiva taught. Im kena tamegana abala. So fine. So on one hand, I certainly understand that we don't want her husband to be attracted to her during this time when she's a nida. On the other hand, says Rabbi Kiva, we don't want her husband to be unattracted to her. Im kena tamegana abala v'nim sabala megarsha. And Rabbi Kiva says, and it can, God forbid, it could lead to a divorce. Ela mata malom ravadavik binidasa, binidasa tehe ashitavo b'mayim. So Rabbi Kiva says, the drasha itself, telling us that she is a nida, unlike the chachamim, and I should have made this point moments earlier, but, okay, it's not too late. Meaning the chachamim understand that the word nida over here, vahadava binidasa, comes from the word nidwe, comes from the word excommunication. Meaning the chachamim actually use the word to darshan their point, which is that she should be in a state of excommunication. She's outside during this period of Nida. And as such, her appearance should reflect that. That's the Chachamim. Rabbi Kiva says, no, the Drasha over here is telling us a totally different point. And that is that she maintains a status of being a Nida until she tovels in the mikvah. That's the only halachic point the Pasuk is telling us. Vis-a-vis her appearance, however, Rabbi Kiva is of the position that her appearance should be not unattractive. She should still make herself attractive to her husband. And the Gemara says, and we're going to take that idea, that very same idea, and we're going to apply it over here. Meaning, despite the fact that women are not allowed to wear a number piece of jewelry out into the chatzir, into the Rishas HaRabim on Shabbos, because of a rabbinic decree, but nevertheless, a certain pieces of jewelry she is allowed to wear, limited as much, in that it's only going to be the kavel, it's only going to be the Pei Nachris, and it can only be worn into the chatzar. But at least those exclusions were put into the Gzera Derabanan, so that she will not be tiskana, she will not be disgusting to her husband. Okay, we are almost done with the daf, but just I'll take a moment right now to go over an idea that I expressed in the very beginning of the perek, but now is a great opportunity to go back to it and just discuss it a little bit, and to see a Tosfos, some of Tosfos inside. Going all the way back to the beginning of the parak, I said that there are a number of challenges with this parak. One of them is a very simple challenge, in that we don't know much of these jewelry articles, items are. Our ability to define what these pieces of jewelry are very difficult to us, as obviously over the years, The cultures have changed, the mode of dress have changed, and so we are, as you saw, at least you saw me do this extensively in this perek, struggling to define what exactly these articles of jewelry are. And the other challenge is as follows, and that is that if you look around in any Jewish community, you will find that women do not have any inhibitions whatsoever of putting on jewelry on Shabbos. And now, the fact of the matter is that in most Jewish communities that exist nowadays, so there is an Eruv, and the truth of the matter is that everything now is a Rishus Yachid. A Rishus Yachid with an Eruv where there's an ability to carry from house to street, from street to shul. So we have an Eruv nowadays, but even in the times where there was no Eruv, and going back to the time of the Rishonim, so women did not seem to pay much attention to this parak of Shas, and women were wearing jewelry. And so the simplest explanation is that they were just lax in this area. But Tosos, as many Rishonim are apt to do, but Tosos certainly can point to a number of Tososim that do this. So Tosos defend the practice of the women, and in that women don't seem to be to be that sensitive anymore to the Gzera de Rabbanan of not wearing most jewelry items into the street. And Tosos defends the position. But as I point out in the beginning of the parak, it's a little bit of a challenge in that we're going to go through an entire parak of discussing the jewelry items that a woman cannot go out. And for the most part, it seems to be that this entire parak gets ignored. You can see Tosas discuss it right here on this daf, right on the bottom of Samach Dalamud Beis. And I'm just going to be reading some of Tosas. We're not going to go through all of it. V'nira da'alacha k'rebi anani. Now, first of all, Tosas makes the following assumption. We just saw together a machlokes between Rav and Rav Anani in terms of whether or not the allowance to go into the chatzer is limited to just the kavel of the peyanachris, or it applies to all of the jewelry that we mentioned. So Rav Anani says it applies to all jewelry, and Tosas says that we assume that that's the position. So because as the Gemara just went over, Rav Anani quoted Rabbi Shmuel b'Rav Yossi, and he is of the status, he is a Tana, and therefore he's the authority to argue on our Mishnah. And not only that, but we're talking about Gzera de Rabbanan, and since we have a debate within Gzera de Rabbanan, so we are entitled to be Mekel, says Tosos. Rav Anani dematir b'chatzar, hainu afilo b'chatzar sheinu merevis. De b'chatzar merevis like a shem chiddush. So, and as far as moving, as going within a chatzar, so Tosos makes the argument over here that we're talking about a chatzar that no Erev was made. Because Tosos says if we're talking about a chatzar where there was an Erev that was made, so then we're talking about one unified Rishus HaYachid, and there you don't even have a chiddush. Obviously, you'd be able to go from house into a chatzar that has an Erev in it. And Tosus says, therefore, im kei nashim mutaros liskashet babais uvechatzer betabos v'tachshiten. And now Tosus says, so therefore, a woman would within the house be allowed to wear all types of jewelry, both in the house and in the chatzer, right, with all different types of jewelries. V'anu she'en lan rishos rabin gamor. Now Tosus here makes the following argument, and that is nowadays we don't have a rishos rabin gamor. Now this Tosus over here goes and coordinates with the Tosus that we saw earlier in the Masechta, at the very beginning of the Masechta, where there was a discussion in terms of the definition of a rishos rabin. And although the Gemara did not say clearly, but Rashi says it, Tosos says it, and Tosos here says it again, that in order for an area to be defined as a Rishus Rabim, you need to have not only a certain dimension, but a certain population. Tosos writes, She'ein lan Rishus Rabim gamo dechol Rishus Rabim shalanu karmelisi. Our Rishus Rabim really is a karmelis. Sharei ein mevuo shalanu rechavos yudvav amo, because our streets are not 16 amos wide, velo shishim ribu ebokimbo, and we don't have 600,000 walking through it, harehu kechatzer sheinu merevis. So therefore, our communities have the status of a chatzer that does not have an eruv. Umutaros nashim shalanu liskashe betabos v'tachshitin. Kein perish rabbeinu tam. And therefore, our women can walk around with jewelry because our communities nowadays do not have rishus rabim status, and therefore it should be no different than an eruv that is, a chatzer that is enum uruv. So says Tosos in terms of defending our women's position of wearing jewelry in our communities. Okay, there is much more to discuss on this topic, even within Tosos himself. Tosos himself also is not perfectly convinced that this is a perfectly good defense of the practice of women. Anyway, see Tosos for more on this discussion. What we got from all this is that Certainly there was a laxity in terms of women conforming to the Zera D'Rabbanan, and here you see Tosos putting it together a defense in terms of why that should be. We go back to the Gemara, just going to finish the daf. There are many times where the Chachamim invoked the prohibition of Maris Ayin, where one is not permitted to do something, not because the act in of itself is wrong, but because it has the appearance of doing something wrong. So as a result of that, the Chachamim say that we have to look good, not only in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we have to look good in the eyes of others as well. And so this is the idea behind Maris Ayin. So Afilu b'chadre chadarim asur, Rav Yehuda Marav says that it's not only true in public, but it's true even in private as well. And the idea over here, I think, is very simple, and that is that once the Chachamim made a gzera of Maris Ayin, so included in that gzera is basically don't get used to this kind of behavior whatsoever, even if it happens to be that you're in a private area. Tanan, the Gemara, is going to challenge based on a mission of Lo Bazug Afa Pisha Pakok. You cannot walk around with a cow on Shabbos with a bell, even if the bell is stuffed and it's not giving off a sound. Why? Because it gives off the appearance that you're taking it to the marketplace. And so therefore you cannot hang a bell on. So this is a classic example of Maris Ayin. V'tan Yidach, now the Gemara quotes another brisa, Pokik Lazug B'tzavara Matayu Ima B'chatzer. Now in the second brisa it says that you can go out with a cow with a bell, as long as the bell is plugged and stuffed, as long as you're limited to the chatzer. So over here it sounds pretty clear that as long as you're within a private area you could do it, and there's no issue of Maris Ayin. And this goes against the position of Rav Yehuda Marav. And Rav Yehuda Marav says that once there is an Isra Maris Ayin, it should apply not only in the public, but even the private arena as well. So Tanaihi, the Gemara says, Machlok is Tanaim Detayin. The Gemara quotes a Brisa as we now turn to the top of Samachei Amud Aleph. Shotchan Bechama Avalo Keneged Am. If your clothing becomes wet on Shabbos, let's say you got drenched in a downpour, and you want to hang up your clothing, so what you could do is you can go home and you can go hang them in the backyard on a line on the backyard, but don't do it where other people can see it. And Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon Osram, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon said that's prohibited. And so over here, what do we just learn together in this brisa? Exactly. It's a machlokas tanayim, whether or not Maris Ayin applies even in the private area or it does not apply in the private area. And this is the Gemara's point, is that Rabbi Yehuda Marav will just simply say, it's a machlokas tanayim, and it's true. You will find brisas going against me, but obviously we just cited that it's a machlokas tanayim.